And we're back. I'm Chris Lappin and welcome to the BT Football Podcast.
Beckham. Into Sheringham. And Solskjaer has done it.
Leicester City have won the Premier League.
Scholes against Emil Heskey. Could it be five? Yes, it is.
Frank De Boer singing out Dennis Bergkamp. Oh, they did it. Oh, that's wonderful.
I'm delighted to be joined this week by Anthony Kendrick.
Hello.
Shane Lees.
Good evening.
I was talking about that. I'm reaching everyone.
I'm not having him stealing my good evening.
Look at me. I am the Richard now.
Good evening.
Maybe we should introduce a good morning for those that listen to the podcast in the morning.
Good afternoon.
You all had a fun summer?
I mean, yeah, it was alright. It was hot.
I've just got back from Turkey, and now I've got the turkey trots.
Oh,
yes, no, I've been watching the women's football. Have you watched much of that, Rich?
Oh, he's already starting.
I literally watched the last...
Let me have a think on that, no.
I watched the last 5 minutes of the France game, when it went into extra time, or overtime.
I have to pretend in my office that I care, because otherwise the feminists get pissed off when we talk about men's football but not women's football. So I know all the scores, and I pretend I saw them, but I don't know. It's terrible.
I wasn't suggesting we do a women's football podcast, I was just...
You have before, so go away!
Well, that was your plan for the summer, wasn't it? You're going to get all the women footballers on and have interviews.
All of them. All five of them.
Nice. Alright, so we've got a packed show for you tonight. We've got an interview with Steve Walters from the Offside Trust, and later in the show we'll be doing our season predictions. But to start, I think we have to start with the biggest transfer of the summer. Watford have exercised their option to buy Tom Cleverley.
it's currently the biggest transfer of all time.
Yeah.
I'm really concerned for Everton actually next season. I'm not sure how they're going to manage without him, but I think now, because I was predicting Watford to go down, but I think now I'm pretty confident they'll stay up. Although, joking aside, I think that's more down to Marco Silva. I really rate him as a manager, but I think Watford will be alright this season.
All right, so we're going to do
15-20 assists for Cleverley, you reckon?
Why are we talking about Tom Cleverley? Why is this happening?
Let's move on from Tom Cleverley.
I actually want to start with Everton, who have lost Lukaku and Deulofeu to Man United and Barcelona for a combined $100 million. And they brought in Rooney, Pickford, Klaassen, Ramirez, and Michael Keane. What do you guys make of their summer so far?
I think people look at transfers like that and they go, "Oh, that's very impressive." And as a particular Southampton fan, I'm looking at what Everton and Leicester are doing and go, "Well, there's another player we should have signed but didn't." But at the same time, can anyone remember the last time any club signed a whole bunch of players after losing their star player and improved them in the immediate next season?
No, it reminds me a bit when Spurs lost Bale and they brought in lots of players.
Yeah, and that sort of works down the line, kind of, not really. Mm. But I don't remember any club where buying that number of players actually turned out well.
I think it's different to the Bale situation, because I think they sold Bale and it was sort of a panic buy with this, especially as most of the transfers were confirmed so early in the window. I think they're all considered signings. They're all youngish players with the potential to grow. I think Everton's business has been fantastic. I think, you know, Klaassen, Pickford, Michael Keane, I think Sandro Ramirez is a bargain for $6 million. I think they've done some really good signings. Rooney's one we can debate. That's a separate issue. But I think all the other signings, I think Everton will have a really good season and push on from that, despite losing Lukaku for me.
I was going to say, because apart from Rooney, the rest of them are under 24, so do you think it's looking towards the future, or do you think it's going to be an immediate impact?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you look at it on paper, and I can see what Anthony's saying. They all do look like good players. As I said, I'm looking at it as a Saints fan thinking, why didn't we go for Keane? Why didn't we go for Klaassen? Why didn't we go for Pickford? Every single one of these transfers, basically. But on paper, signing that many players is fine. On Football Manager, it's fine. On FIFA, it's fine. In real world, you've got a whole bunch of new players now fitting into a new attachment system. You don't necessarily know your best teams from the off. You've got to suddenly you've got an excess of players in certain positions. Everton have probably far too many midfielders, if we're being honest. I just think, as much as we're all a little bit envious of seeing they've spent this kind of money, you know, signed these really talented players other clubs are after, I don't think it's that good when you sign that many. I agree, a lot of them are bargains, like that Sandra. I can't believe they got him for that little. But I still think that number of signings always works out to be questionable.
I think the first few games of their season, they've got an absolute nightmare they've won as well, haven't they?
I think the first five games, they've got Spurs, Man City. They got four of the top six last season. I can't remember which four to top my head, but they've got United.
I think the players that they've brought in will solidify their seventh place, but I don't think they'll push on from it. You take that top six, and I think that top six is still quite a bit ahead of Everton.
Who do you think's going to replace Lukaku's goals, or do you think they still need to bring in a striker, or do you think they might start with Rooney up front at the beginning of the season?
I think the goals will just be spread out a lot more than they were for the last few seasons.
Ronald Koeman said he'd rather have four or five players that can score 10 goals a season each rather than be dependent on one man to get all their goals, and you know, I can sort of see that. They don't have that guy who's going to get them 20 goals, but they have got, you know, Klaassen will score a few, Rooney will score a few, Sandra will score a few,
Balassi, Lochman.
I was going to say, I do get when people say, oh, it's better to have the goal spread out, because then if your star player starts, you know, firing blanks, then all of a sudden it's not so bad. I actually think it tends to work out the other way around, and I can say that with a degree of certainty as a Southampton fan, because the last sort of couple of seasons, we haven't always had a star goal scorer, or we've had players who were good goal scorers, like Pella, who then turned around and got injured for half a season, so that never really works out. Problem with it is, if you go out of form for a little bit, then everyone stops scoring. So it kind of compounds it, whereas if you go out of form and you've got a star player, like let's say Aguero, even if you're having a bad game, you know he can pop up and get you a goal by winning. That is, I think, the difference. I think that's a bigger loss, to lose someone who you know will get you 20 goals in the season. But thinking, oh, but if everyone gets here four or five goals and it will all work out, it doesn't actually work out that way, is the big problem.
So they have signed Sandro from, he got 14 goals in La Liga last season. Do you think he...
Malaga.
That's actually La Liga, yeah, Malaga. So he got 14 goals last season. Do you think he'll get like 10, 12, 15 goals to fill the Lukaku's boots?
He'll get some goals. He'll get 10 or 12 goals, as you say. I think he's not going to be that every game's goal scorer, but I do think he'll score a few. It's obviously hard to predict, isn't it? Because of how, you know, you can score. You get loads of players who come into the league who've scored loads in a foreign league and don't do so well. You get some who come in and just hit the ground running straight away. You know, for all we know, he could be like a Michu sort of player where he scores, what, 20-odd goals in his debut season. But, the way he plays, he is a finisher. He gets in behind. I think he'll get 10, 12 goals at least.
He does look like a talent, but for me the problem is you've got Spanish strikers are the new Dutch strikers. You sign them from this league and then half of them are brilliant, the other half are just dreadful. I mean, you look at some of the last few ones. Iago Aspas, everyone knew he was a quality player. He's gone back to Spain, he's a quality player. He goes to Liverpool, he does nothing. Soldado, everyone knew he was a proper, you know, striker. He was a poacher's finisher. He'd be in there, he'd be in the box, he'd be getting goals, did nothing at Spurs. Negredo, he had, okay, half of a good season, but he just completely fell off the map. And you know, there's even like the likes of Torres, where for the first few seasons he's in the Premier League, he's untouchable. Then all of a sudden you've got the Chelsea situation, you can't do anything. Then you've also got the likes of Diego Costa. So it swings and roundabouts with Spanish strikers, and I almost feel like it's flipping a coin at the start of a season and try and work out if they're going to be any good or not. So I'm not going to commit at all.
So we all have the agreement they haven't done enough to break into the top six then this season? Or did he just need...
I think that you look at the top six teams and they're investing... You know, they've already got the squads there and they're investing in a few little pieces to make them even better, whilst Everton are pretty much having to transform their entire squad.
I think they'll be close. I think they'll be close to it. Maybe not. It's hard to back them over the sides there, but they're not far off. I'd probably back them to win like a... Or do, you know, have a cup run or something, maybe win the League Cup, something like that would be my prediction, but probably not. It's hard. I think they'll be close to six, but probably not quite.
So what about...
I actually think they'll do worse than last season, and that's mainly on the basis of, I try and understand what previous clubs did they thought it would turn out well, and then it absolutely did not do that at all. And I can't remember the last few successful teams that had massive squads, and Everton do have a massive squad. That is a big team. And who also signed a whole bunch of players at the start of the season and lost their star player previously. The only teams I can ever think that have ever managed to do something similar to that were Southampton, when they first went into the Premier League. Big squad, continuously lost best players, signed quite a few players to replace them. But I think, as a Southampton fan, I think we got lucky a lot of times. Honestly, I don't think there was quite as much art in it as we like to say there was. I think we got lucky with quite a few of them, because equally, we had so many poor transfers. But I'm looking at Everton now and thinking, the size of that squad, having that much competition, people always thought, oh, it's really good to have that many players in each position. I'm sorry, when was the last team who did well in the league who didn't have a consistent starting 11? That's not a good thing for competition. That doesn't help competition. So competition doesn't help. That means you're constantly switching around. You're playing a squad rotation system. I don't remember the last successful team that ever did that. Properly successful. A team that went on to win, get top four, get trophies. So on the face of it, again, it's one of those things, it's almost like a football manager situation. It looks good. Does it ever actually work out that way? And if someone can come up with examples against that, please do. But I can't remember an example of it ever going really well.
United often did it. United often rotated their squad and it worked to their benefit.
That was also a United team during their absolute dominant years with Sir Alex Ferguson. Bit of an exception.
Oh, you asked for an example.
Yeah, but that's sitting around going, okay, if we throw the best manager in history at it, we might get something.
Well, I take your point. I'd argue perhaps that it's partly, you know, obviously if a team gets no injuries or whatever, you know, they'll do well, like Chelsea and Leicester, who've won the last two Premier Leagues. Part of the reason they won it is because they had that ability to basically play the same team, you know, partly because they weren't involved in any cup competitions to any significance, but also because they just got lucky with injuries.
Right, shall we get to the other extreme with Spurs, who, despite getting £50 million for Kyle Walker, haven't brought anybody in yet?
Danny Rose, is he?
Is he rumoured to go to United? I heard today.
Pardon?
Is he rumoured to go to United? I'm trying to...
I think he's rumouring to want to go anywhere at the moment, by the sound of his interview. He's on £40,000 a week at the moment.
Yeah,
at Spurs.
I heard a great quote today that they've got Champions League players on Championship wages.
Yeah, and I think that sums Spurs up to a degree. For years they've always been at that cusp of being able to break into the next level, and they've just never seemed to want to break into the next level.
Okay, can I ask you a question? Which player in that Spurs starting 11 do you think is not good enough? Because, you know, assume it's the same standard 11 as last season, except Kieran Trippier in for, you know, Kyle Walker. I don't see any weaknesses in that team. You know, it's a young team that's developing. I don't see the point in them going out and getting a marquee signing for the sake of it. I think it's easy to say, oh, they've not done any business, but I don't see much wrong with that team. What, don't do business for the sake of it is my counter-argument.
I can't believe I'm agreeing with Anthony.
Have you got one point?
You look at it and people say, oh, they haven't done this business. They've got good young players coming through. Yes, they've loaned a few out. They've got good young players coming through to provide backup to the players they already have. They don't look like losing too many of their players. Maybe Danny Rose will go as well. But okay, he's a very good left back, not unreplaceable. They can replace him with the money they either get for him, or they can bring someone through their academy. I don't know, they might have someone in that position. I genuinely couldn't say.
Ben Davis,
he's a very good player. And I agree, that isn't a squad that's particularly weak in there. The only way they can go and improve that squad is if they're going out and spending £90 million on one player, £100 million on one player. That's the only way they get any better, by going out and signing one of those genuinely world-class talents. The question is, one, could they pull them? Because especially the second they get it accepted, someone else will go for them as well. And you know, two, it's kind of what Daniel Levy said. This is an insane market. This cannot possibly be sustainable. The spending's jumped too much for one year. And I agree completely. The spending has got unsustainable. And as much as fans, we sometimes want to see... Yeah, but the jump between this year and last year is so significant. And the money between this year and last year hasn't changed. That's the big problem. Normally when it's happened, there's been changes. That's what's explained it.
I remember when United bought Andy Cole for £7 million, and it was like, oh my God, how is this going to keep on going? When we bought Brian Robson for £1.5 million, it was like, oh my God. And it just keeps happening, and it will keep happening.
When
we bought Pogba for £89 million, that was ridiculous. Now
that is absolute bollocks. That's the same thing people said, what was it, 9 years ago in 2008 when the financial crash happened? Good times will keep on going forever. Rubble is not some unique thing. It's an economic bubble like any other kind of economic bubble. Eventually it hits a glass ceiling and it bursts. That day will come for football. That could be 2 years, that could be 20 years. We don't know when that will happen, but eventually the money, it will no longer have this exponential growth that football currently has. And when that day comes, the clubs that were smart will be the ones who are reaping rewards, and the clubs that are spending stupid, crazy money that they cannot actually fund are the ones that are going to collapse. That day will eventually happen. I don't know if it's going to be soon enough for what Daniel Levy is saying for it to actually make sense immediately, but I will prefer football to be in this realms of actual realisticness, because as much as people say it's an internal market, 200 million, if they can afford it, that's fine, that's fine. Okay, yeah, I can get that argument. But 200 million, it was still £200 million yesterday. It was still the exact same amount of money last season. That money hasn't changed. The money is getting obscene. And I think good on a club that says to themselves, we've got young players, we don't need to go out and spend ridiculous money for the sake of it.
I completely agree with everything you've said, Shane. I think the one thing you do disagree with is the, you're saying about, well, the 200 million for Neymar. Personally, I think that's a reasonable fee for that. I think the bigger problem is, as Jose Mourinho, I think, said, one of the managers said it, that, you know, players who are just good or decent players are costing 40, 50 million when they should be 10 million or something. I think that's the bigger issue for me. But, yeah, pretty much completely agree with all you just said, Shane. And I don't know, I've not had an answer to, you know, who should Spurs go and sign? Who should they go out and sign that would improve that starting lineup significantly and is worth the money? Because I can't think of anyone.
Well, my thinking is that because they're playing at Wembley this season, not having a big disruption within the squad is probably a good thing if they got. Because
I mean, my personal prediction this season is
the stadium is why they're not buying anyone.
Sorry?
The cost of the stadium is why they're not buying anyone.
Well, that's probably a big factor in it. And I'm going to wager now Spurs don't do very well this season. And people will say it's because they didn't do the transfer business. I think it will just be a stadium move. Again, looking at consistencies over previous seasons, I don't remember the last club that ever moved stadiums and did well the season immediately afterwards.
Yeah,
so I think it will come down to that. But the problem is people will misconstrue it because journalists have to write articles because that's what they do for a living, and one of them will go, oh, was it because they didn't sign enough players? And then Spurs might panic next season or in January and go, oh, shit, let's spend 200 million.
Well, sorry, if they don't make a good start, do you think they might do some panic buys on deadline day?
They do have a history of it, don't they? Potentially, yeah.
No.
Didn't they get Sissoko last year on deadline day?
30 million.
And they paid 30 million.
I'm predicting that this time next year, Dele Alli and Harry Kane will not be at Spurs.
That's going to be my next question. There's rumours that Barca and Bayern wants Dele Alli.
I can see Dele Alli leaving. I mean, simple question is, why does he have any reason to be loyal to Spurs? He's not like Harry Kane, where he came from the academy. He was bought from MK Dons. He has no reason to be loyal to Spurs. Someone like Harry Kane, I think there's a little bit of question about that, because I think someone like Harry Kane does seem to be a player who thinks, I could be here my whole career. I want to be a one-career player. He's clearly got that in mind, rather than just, I want the money, I want trophies. He's going to have that as well. Let's not pretend. He's going to have that as well. But he's clearly got a thought towards, I could be a Spurs legend if I stay here. So I think true. But I think if he's been saying the things he's been saying up until now, if he's been doing the things he's been doing, it's clear that he's not exactly getting bad advice outside of it either. And that can be the big killer for dumb players. Dele Alli, I can definitely see leaving within 2-3 years and going to a big European team. But Harry Kane, I think, is a pretty big question mark over it.
This is going to be a really boring podcast. I completely agree with Shane again.
What is this? We've gone away from the summer and we like each other now.
I always liked you, Shane. I just disagree with you sometimes.
I've heard that.
Play up rivalry. I hate you.
I've heard after Danny Rose, it's not just him. There's quite a lot of dissension in the dressing room in Spurs at the moment.
I do think that comes down to, and again, from Southampton, we had it as well. Went up from League One to the Championship to the Premier League, and then obviously our wage bill had to go up significantly for that, because we were paying League One wages before. But you can't do it all in one season, because suddenly your balance sheet just completely ruins itself. Or in the practical sense, if there's some players you leave out and then they get a little bit pissy. Spurs have gone from kind of, you know, mid-table, maybe Europa League club to one of the top clubs in England in a very short period of time. So, of course, their wage bill isn't going to actually match their status currently.
Right.
But I think it's almost... I think Levy is probably being aware that the staging move doesn't necessarily mean good times will keep on rolling forever. And if they drop back down to being, you know, an almost ran team, going for the Champions League but not might getting it, going for Europa League not might getting it, and they have a massive wage bill for title contenders, it's not a good situation to be in. I think that's kind of influencing their caution.
That's another story. Is Virgil van Dijk has apparently handed in a transfer request. So Southampton have got a new manager in this season. You broke your transfer record. So Shane, what are your hopes for the season?
Yeah, I'm actually quite optimistic about this season. Not necessarily because I think we're going to go on and do masses, but because I think we've got a genuine chance now to kind of pick up where we left off about two or three seasons ago. If you remember saying about two or three seasons ago, every single year we were bringing through another young player. Yeah. Not just five games here or there. They were getting into the first team. They were playing the season. I like that we haven't gone out and done a massive ton of business. Yes, I do wish there were some players we'd gone for. I look at the likes of the Iheanacho, gone to Leicester and think, God, have we missed an opportunity there. That has got Southampton written all over that kind of transfer. I do look at the likes of Michael Keane and Harry Maguire and think, we need a centre-back. We're probably going to lose Van Dijk, so we need to get someone in. And that kind of irritates me. But at the same time, I think Jack Stevens is going to play the whole season now, unless we go out there and sign another centre-back. And that's good, because he looked very promising. I think we've got space if we lose, for instance, Bertrand, which is possible, for Matt Target to come through, for McQueen to come through. Because we're not doing all these signings, I'm looking at our positions and thinking, actually, we've got some chances for the young players to get game time here. The big one, I think, this season, is we brought him back from loan from Blackburn, where he was really good in the Championship, is Sam Gallagher. He looks really, really quite good. And because we've not gone out and signed another striker, despite the fact we have two strikers who are injury-prone, tells me that we're planning on using him this season. And I think that's really positive, because he's a striker where there aren't many like him in the league currently, especially not in England. 6'4", he's actually got a turn of pace. He's a bit like Diego Costa, I think. Not necessarily in his aggression, but in the type of player he is. And so for me, as a Southampton fan, I've always had the mentality, if we're not going to go and spend a whole bunch of money and start targeting cups and you're trying to get into Europe, fine. Well, let's dedicate our season to bring through our youngsters. Let's almost that kind of self-sacrificial element of let's get players into our England squad. Let's get English talent coming through. That's what we're about. That's what we've always been about. And I'm quite optimistic this season, with the new manager we've got in, that we'll be able to go and do that. And I do like that we haven't done masses of business on that account.
I think you're going to finish about 15th this year.
Wow, it's totally the other way, isn't it? I wouldn't be surprised if we finished lower than we did last season. But again, it depends on how that season goes.
It's a bit weasel words, but, you know, obviously coming on to predictions later in the show, but I think between about 8th and 15th, you know, it's so difficult to split some of the teams there. But yeah, I do think going back to, you know, some of the business and stuff, I think it's admirable the position Southampton taken on Van Dijk. I think it's a very admirable position, and it's good they're not just caving in. But then when you actually read what Van Dijk said, he said that if there's interest from a top European club, he wants the team to consider it, which again I think is a reasonable position for the player to take.
True, but Liverpool aren't a top European club. Come on. Maybe 20 years ago, where's he even living these days?
It's only a Champions League club or something.
Well, the thing with Van Dijk is, and I think this is what kind of annoys Saints fans, is for one thing, he signed a 6-year contract last year. So he's clearly his head was in the right place at that point.
He's got a new agent since then, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's committing. He becomes a club captain. He's committing to the team. Okay, great. And then we hear all about, you know, him getting tapped up. And it's quite obvious he's been completely unsettled by agents, by other clubs. In fact, we know he was directly tapped up by Jurgen Klopp at Liverpool. It's shocking how quickly that went under the radar, despite the fact that it's completely against the laws of the game. And I think if a club like Chelsea did that, again, there'd be a real furore. That has gone dangerously under the radar. I think it's because it's become so commonplace. What we used to think was tapping up is now kind of standard accepted. And I think we turned around and said, hang on a second, it's against the rules of the game, so yeah, we'll hold you to that. And I think that's good.
Liverpool put forward that statement, didn't he, saying, very sorry, we won't chase him up anymore now.
Yeah, and they've clearly not stuck to that at all, because he's still unsettled. But it's kind of like when you pop the cork of a champagne bottle, you can't put it back in. They've done it already. They've unsettled a player who was well settled. And they've been working on that for a while, and we know they have. That was before even the transfer window. So it's stuff like that does quite deeply irritate me, because it's okay if a bigger club comes in, they say, right, we're putting in a transfer bid, here you go, here's this amount of money, will you sell your players to us for that? We go, yeah, okay, that's actually a ridiculous sum of money, you can have them for that, go and talk to them. Fine, okay, if we lose a player fair and square, that's going to happen. But if we are losing players to what is essentially the dark arts of football, when I do think Southampton do try and go about things the right way, that kind of makes me lose faith a little bit in sport. Because that's one of those moments where you go...
Deals win in the last few summers.
No, and there's been plenty of those deals. Like, even if we've gone, oh, we're quite irritated about the way the players gone about it, the clubs have gone about it in the appropriate manner, or you know, things have generally gone as they should do with a transfer. It's okay to lose your big players, and again, to sign players who are as good, better, maybe a bit worse, which we also do. But it's the way it happens, and the Van Dijk thing, it's not a case, I don't think, if it was just a case of he had handed in a transfer request and said, look, I want to leave now, I know big clubs are interested in me, we'd have gone, all right, yeah, we're probably going to keep him. We'll sing horrible songs about you when you turn up to our ground, but, you know, that kind of stuff happens. Because he's turned around and put in a transfer request after he's been publicly unsettled in an illegal way by other clubs, the whole thing just stinks. And it's, at this point, I think either you let him rot in the stands and actually stick with that, so you're on a 6-year contract, enjoy.
5 years.
or we turn around and go, right, all right, open season, highest bidder, come on, come in, someone's going to punt 80 million here. This is a ridiculous transfer window, we'll leave it till late on. Someone go for it, let's see what happens. Because there's no point in keeping him if we're going to play him, because we're not. So I think either we put our foot down and say, right, you're really going to suffer for this, you have completely disrespected our club, or we turn around the other way and go, you want to play it this way? Fine. But you're going to absolutely bid a stupid amount of money to go and get him.
Oh, I'd let him go, but I'd let him go to anybody but Liverpool.
I think that is the position Saints are taking. I mean, there was a thing that came out of a club insider, and most people are fairly certain this was Les Reed, which was basically, if we're going to sell him, it is anyone but Liverpool. We refuse to do business with that club. So I wouldn't be surprised if he went to the likes of Chelsea, which I would not be that pissed off about, because again, they had a bit stupid money for him. So yeah, if it's going to happen, let it happen in the way that is at least useful for us. Otherwise, put our foot down and turn around and say, we'll be the first club in how many years to turn around and say, player and go, you are actually sitting in the reserves now. Enjoy. You're here for an entire year. And after that, we might keep you there for a year more.
Alright, so we'll bring part one to a close there. It's time for our interview with the Offside Trust. And I'm delighted to be joined again by Steve Walters. How are you doing this evening, Steve?
Hi, Chris. How are you keeping?
I'm very well. It says dying of hay fever, but I'll soldier on. Alright, so for those who have missed our first couple of interviews with Steve, Steve is a former Crewe and Northwich Victoria midfielder who was one of the brave footballers who came out and spoke about his sexual abuse he was subjected to by a former youth coach. And since then, he's gone on to set up the Offside Trust. So last time we spoke, you're just about to launch your website. How are things going?
Yeah, they're going very well, to be honest. We've had a great response from the website. We've had several victims, our survivors, we like to call them, get in touch with the Offside Trust. And we are now just trying to build up the team and what support mechanisms we can provide now for the Offside Trust. That's kind of the point where we're at.
Yeah, and I've noticed a lot on Facebook, there's been a lot of fundraising through grassroots football.
Yeah, that's right. Obviously, we want to raise the awareness, first and foremost. And secondly, we need money in the bank now so we can start building what we've done so far. But the grassroots football has been fantastic. The likes of bucket collections. We've had a few people doing sponsored runs. We've all, a lot of clubs, I think it's over 40 already, provided advertising hoardings and pages and pages in the match programme. So, yeah, we're quite happy with the progress so far.
Yeah, and the main reason for us coming on today is to discuss the Offside Trust Celebrity Football Match. So, correct.
That's Sunday the 20th of August, Curzon Ashton in Manchester. It's going to be a fantastic day. The media coverage we've got already, it looks absolutely fantastic. Hopefully, well, it's looking like I'm going to go on Good Morning Britain the Friday before to promote it with David Morrissey, hopefully.
Oh, brilliant.
So the media coverage is going to be huge. We still need more ticket sales, and we still got sponsorship packages as well. But, we've got some big celebrities, David Morrissey, Rolf Little, there's ex-players such as Danny Murphy, Trevor Sinclair, Paul Dickoff, Ashley Ward, you know, there's some big celebrities and, you know, big ex-pros as well, so we're very excited.
Are you planning to dust off the boots yourself?
Or? I might have a little 10-minute cameo.
Yeah.
I'll have to wait and see, like, you know, I think it'd be fitting if we could all, you know, all the male participants at Offside Trust, if we could get our boots on and get on the grass and have a little bit of experience. I think that'd be fitting, maybe.
Do you have any news on how you're going to split the teams up? Is it celebrities versus ex-pros, or is it got mixed teams? Or?
We're not totally sure, to be honest, at the moment. At the moment, it's going to be like a celebrity side against maybe superstars, with an Offside Trust players, and, you know. We've got quite a few high-profile presenters as well, so we're not totally sure at the moment. I don't think that's really important. I think the important part at the moment is to raise the awareness and and make it a family, fun, entertaining day for everyone to come and watch.
Apart from the game, you've got a few singers. Is it Rosita? Is that right?
Yes, we've got. I can't really say her name. Is it Rowetta X? Happy Mondays.
Yeah.
I think Ellie Dibben as well, the country singer. She's offered to sing as well, and I know Nesney Jones as well. I know she's huge in India.
Yeah.
She's offered to sing as well. So there's also magicians, and I know there's a few. What's his name? I can't remember his name. Somebody off the X Factor is also offered to play as well. And then so yes, it's going to be fantastic.
Yes. So where are the tickets available, and how much will they cost?
Yes. Well, the tickets are available on, if you go onto our website, theoffsidetrust.com. You can, there's a link on there to buy tickets, and also Wolf Live. Laura Wolf kindly organising all the ticket sales and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah. If there's any businesses out there who want to actually sponsor the game, that they can go onto there and click on. There's various sponsorship packages and all that sort of stuff. VIP packages. There's plenty on there.
So I did notice the VIP package was. What's included in that?
The VIP package, you can get there early. You can obviously have a lovely meal, three-course meal. There's going to be opportunities to meet all the sort of celebrities and obviously the ex-pros, and it's going to be a very special experience for anybody with a VIP package.
So obviously this is a game in the north. Are you planning to do a southern one if it's successful?
Yes, obviously short term we need to, obviously we're all novices to this. If this is a success, we are looking to maybe have one down south, and I kind of take it from there. So let's see how successful this is first, and then we can look forward and maybe do one down towards London way.
Yeah. So before we finish, do you want to plug the social media for?
Yes. If anybody wants to follow myself on Twitter, or myself and Chris Unsworth are the directors, and we got a ruck of ambassadors as well. There's a team of us.
Yeah.
Please do follow us, and obviously the Offside Trust, follow us, and there's updates and any new celebrities on board, any information, you can get it on Twitter or Facebook.
Yeah, I'll put all the links in the description below this interview. So I've really enjoyed speaking to you today. I'd love to have you on again for another update.
Okay, Chris, that's great. Thanks for your time. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Okay, take care.
Huge thanks to Steve for joining us today. If you're in the Manchester area, please attend the game and support a great cause. So, another thing that's being brought in this summer is the ABBA penalty format. It was used in the Charity Shield at the weekend. What were your thoughts on it, the system as a whole?
I think it's a bit strange. It's a strange thing to see, because obviously we're used to that, you know, standard one person takes the penalty, the other team takes it, etc. But I think in time it will just be the standard way it's done. I think, you know, it's like goal line technology. When that came out, when that was first used, everyone thought this is strange, this is weird. But then in time now, it's just the normal part of the game everyone accepts. I think it's like that. I personally think it's a fairer system. I think that, you know, it is quite clear from the evidence that going first gives you an advantage in penalty shootout, and that, yeah, balances it out a bit. And I don't have any issue with it myself.
Is 60-40 really a big enough difference, do you reckon? If it was like 80% of teams went first, we're winning.
I think it's almost irrelevant. whether or not there was an advantage for first takers. Because if they turn around and said, right, the evidence is whoever takes a penalty first is more likely to win, okay, fair enough, that's a bias effect, so we've got to correct it. The thing I don't think is, did anybody actually ask the question of, will this negatively affect who takes second now instead? Because you look at that last one, and it just seemed that the team who was taking two in a row, you know, the team who was first taking two in a row, which was Arsenal in that case, did a lot better out of it. So I don't think they turned around and said, here's a problem, but I don't think they've asked if their solution will cause the exact same problem in reverse. Which, it strikes me as it could be quite likely to.
On the evidence thing, like when they got into checking stuff, what about if in front of which fans it's taken?
I was going to say, if you're the home team, you tend to win. Not tend to win, you more times you win. So you're going to have to do it at each end of the ground, take penalties.
Well, the problem is trying to...
much of an influence on it. I mean, you know, however many thousand jeering fans in front of you.
That's the nebulous element of psychology, though, isn't it? Is the fans you're in front of going to make a difference? Is it, if you've got a bigger team up against a little team, does the little team have more confidence taking the penalties, or is the big team feel the pressure more? How many elements that influence this bias did they take into account when they made this decision? And I always think, yeah, okay, sometimes you want to change something because you want to see if something else will work better. All right, fine. But if they turn around and they're saying, these are all the reasons we feel this is good to change it, I always think you have to ask, is the stuff we're doing now going to have the same impact? Also, what was the actual cause of that bias in the first place? I genuinely don't think they actually asked that question. Because if they did, they'd have had the same problem we just did, where we turned around and said, actually, there's about five reasons why people miss penalties, or score penalties. And it's so open at that point. So it's a little bit questionable. I'm not going to say I'm for or against it yet, because we haven't got enough evidence for it, but it does seem a little bit like a change for a change's sake.
I think, I don't know, because it's obviously just a trial for this season. It's going to be used in all the EFL Cup and in the playoffs as well. I think it's worth seeing for a season. I'd maybe question not in the playoffs because it's such a big occasion. I had a debate with someone on Twitter about that. I'd say for the playoffs, maybe not, but I think it's worth looking at for one season, personally.
Yeah, we did ask our Twitter followers what they thought of it. Anthony, have you got the results?
Generally, people were quite against this new ABBA system. 29% of people were... said that system was better, and 71% prefer the traditional system. So yeah, and I know the Sun and the Mirror both came out, and there's quite a lot of articles having a go at this system as well. So
I think nobody likes change.
I just agree with Shane. I don't know anybody who's asked ever complained about the way penalties have ever been taken. I think a fair way is the old MLS one, where you run from the halfway line, you have 18 seconds to shoot. I like that one.
Oh, God.
Don't they do that in a lot of youth and academy football? I'm sure you're probably quite well-versed in that. I'm pretty sure they do that in some academy competitions.
I've not seen an academy competition. It used to be, they didn't do draws in the early days of the MLS, so that's how they decided the winner.
All right.
Let's do a new system, crossbar challenge from the halfway line.
That
would be great. Right. You can do the most
keep-yields. That's the most keep-yields.
I'm probably having a dab off.
United would win every penalty shootout, wouldn't they?
Yeah, it's a Pogba and Lingard just doing dab off.
Show your tricks. Do that,
come
on, that'd be great.
Alright, so huge money has been spent on strikers like Lacazette, Morata, Lukaku. If you had a pound to put on one of them, who do you think is going to score the most goals this season?
Lukaku.
I agree. I think Lukaku.
Lacazette.
I'm
glad someone disagreed. I think the reason I'll justify a bit. I think the reason I say Lukaku for me is that I think obviously he's played in the Premier League is the first obvious argument. The other two are a bit more unknown quantities. But I think more is that Arsenal, I think Giroud will play more of a role than people think, and Batshuayi at Chelsea. I think that will limit their game time a bit more, whereas I think Lukaku will end up playing more minutes, and Yeah, I think he'll be the top scorer of those three, but Harry Kane will be the Premier League top scorer.
Do you think Lukaku's going to score more goals than Ibrahimovic did last season?
Yes.
Yes.
He won't, well, as long as he's not injured for a quarter of it.
What I think with Lukaku is that he's just the right jigsaw piece for United at the moment. Mm. When it was all the beginning of the summer and it was like, oh, United are going to get Morata, Chelsea are going to get Lukaku, I was very glad when it ended up being the other way around.
Yeah.
Because I think Morata, I think, is a great player, but I don't think he's the right jigsaw piece that Lukaku is.
For me, I think Lacazette, he seems like he'll be a very natural fit for Arsenal, and I do think he'll get a majority of the games. I'm even I'm quite disappointed they've not given more of a chance to Danny Welbeck, who I still think he's actually good enough to start. But the problem, I think, with Lukaku, with United, and this isn't necessarily thinking he's a bad player, because I actually think this is a very good signing, it's a very smart signing, but it's that element with Man United. Every single time they spend a lot of money on a player, there's a lot of expectations. No one ever knows entirely how it will work out, because there's all of a sudden that massive pressure. And lots of people go, oh, but yeah, you can't argue with quality players. Di Maria was a quality player. Louis van Gaal was a quality manager. Man United have done this before, where they've signed players who everyone thought, that can't be a failure, that can't go wrong. But it's just that mental element of being someone like the main striker at Man United. Every paper in the country is going to report on what you do every single week. Some people thrive in it. A player like Ibrahimovic thrives in it. Mm. Lukaku hasn't done it yet for a big club. We can say Chelsea, but that was a fleeting part. He was not the main man. And Everton, you know, a lot of respect to Everton, but they're not a big club in the way that Man United are going to get the attention. There's that element of doubt. There's an element that says there's a question mark over it. And that's why I think, because there's so much less pressure on someone like Lacazette, and because he does seem like a very natural fit for Arsenal and the Premier League, I think there's a little bit less doubt I have there.
I think the thing you said about Di Maria coming to United, I think that's a big difference to Lukaku.
That's just an example.
He knows the Premier League. Di Maria came in, he didn't even want to come to United in the first place. He wanted to go to PSG. He had his house robbed, and his wife just moaned about the place from the moment she set foot in Manchester.
More recent example then, Pogba. He was first coming, hit the ground absolutely running. He's played in the Premier League before. He, you know, came up for United. Supposed to be real quality. Supposed to be a game winner for them. Okay, he didn't have a terrible season. I'm not going to say he had a terrible season. It wasn't that good. It wasn't that much better than any other kind of good midfielder in the Premier League.
I think he was still up there as, you know, he wasn't the best in the Premier League last year. He wasn't like Kante level, but I would still have him in the top five last year.
I don't even think he was better than Herrera last season.
No, he wasn't.
Again, this is the element you get with a big club like United. There's always that element of how do the players adjust to being a club like that. Sometimes you think it should be so obvious. A club, you know, Pogba was at United before, went to Juventus, another massive club, and a club that, you know, is getting every single bit of attention in the Italian media. And then he's gone to United. It seems like a natural fit. But something just didn't click quite right. Maybe it was his first season, entirely possible. But there's, with a player like Lukaku, you never know 100% how they're going to adapt to that kind of level of pressure. And he's one of those players who seems to have a bit of a shock about him. And I think when you play for a club like United, you have to be mentally very strong. You have to be able to weather everything as much as you have to be able to, you know, enjoy the good times. A player like Ibrahimovic, yeah, he might be a bit of an arse sometimes, but he is mentally rock. He has that mental strength, and that's why he succeeded at United. Lukaku is one of those players. You know, if things aren't going well for him in a game, and we've seen it countless times, he downs tools. He says, it's not happening for me. He gets in a little bit of a mood. He doesn't do it in Ozil, where he's not looking very keen, but then will crop up all of a sudden and think, Jesus Christ, that was a sublime pass. He's not one of those players who's permanently got that kind of downer on. It hits him like a train when he's suddenly going, this isn't happening for me. And I think a player like that, there is that question mark. Can he handle that pressure? I personally think, yeah, he probably will. That's my personal opinion. But because there is that element of doubt, I'm going to have to back like that.
I think it'd be interesting as well to see if Zlatan, when he's fit, because he's still training October, November, whether, especially if Lukaku doesn't hit the ground, whether Zlatan comes back and, you know, even if Lukaku flops to start or fails to start and makes a slow start, whether Zlatan becomes the main man again.
I think having Zlatan sort of staying around will benefit Lukaku in the long run, because they're similar physical players. And I think having that sort of, you know, one of the world's best ever strikers in the dressing room and on the training pitch, helping him out will benefit him in the long term.
So we also asked our Twitter followers for their thoughts on who's going to score the most goals. Anthony, have you got the results?
I have, yeah. So Lukaku is expected to score the most. 44% of the people, of our followers, said Lukaku. And then it was close. Lacazette just about in second place with 30%, and then Morata with 26%. I don't know how much that was influenced by his poor Community Shield performance, but yeah.
I don't know how much of that poll was influenced by the fact that we mostly have Man United supporting listeners.
Well, I know.
You have Man United supporting listeners who love Oriol Romeo.
I've looked at the odds as well, and Lukaku's where is it? Lukaku's 7-2. He's second favourite to be top goal scorer. Then you've got Aguero and Jesus. Morata's 9-1. Lacazette 10-1. So it roughly reflects that.
Yeah. Alright, we'll finish part three there, and we'll finish with our season predictions.
Hello, this is Adam Virgo, and you are listening to the V2 Football Podcast.
So, I'm not going to predict West Ham's finishing the top four again this year.
We'll come on to our bold predictions last. We'll start with Shane. Who do you expect to finish in the top four?
Okay, so West Ham, I'm going to go with Arsenal, Manchester City, Chelsea, and United.
Yep. Richard, what's your thought?
City, United, Chelsea, and Liverpool.
Ooh. Anthony?
Time for a controversial one. I'm going to go City, United, Spurs and Liverpool.
Ooh. So you don't think Chelsea or Arsenal are going to make it?
I think that, I think Arsenal, it's a hard one. It is really hard to predict. I think Arsenal, I think, will try and win the Europa League. I think they'll have a similar season to United. I think last season, I think Arsenal will go for the Europa League for me. To win a European competition. And I don't know, I just get a feeling with Chelsea because they've lost Matic and, Costa's probably going to go. I've just got a feeling with Chelsea and something's clearly not right with Conte and, the owners. I don't think they'll be in the top
four. He's not happy that Matic went.
Yeah, I think that's a big mistake. I think he's probably the best defensive midfielder in the Premier League, probably second best in the world that I can think of as an out-and-out, sort of destroyer centre midfielder.
Romeo's better.
Romeo is very good. I like Romeo a lot. But, I'm going to say Chelsea to finish out the top four. That was going to be my bold prediction. That was going to be a big announcement at the end. But,
you do remember when last year I said, I think they're going to be poor this year and they won the league. Yeah, you remember that?
Yep.
That's you this year.
Can I just say, I know I said that West Ham would make top four, but I also did predict Chelsea to win the league last year.
Alright, so who do you think's going to win the league?
Okay, here's where I have to disagree with everyone. Considering neither of you put them in the top four, I think Arsenal.
Ooh.
Mm. My basis of that is essentially, I think everyone knows it's probably Wenger's last season now.
Yeah.
And I don't think they're going to try terribly hard in Europa League. I think they're just going to throw everything at the league and think, this is, if we've got one chance here, we don't have the Champions League pressure, so let's have a go for it. And I don't think that the other teams, I do agree kind of with the Chelsea one, but I don't think the other teams are strengthening that well. Chelsea, I do think have gone worse. And I don't think that's just in the players, because I do think they've signed good players to replace the ones who've gone, or they've just signed good players generally. There's something about the mentality that's completely shifted. And I think that's a really negative thing. With United, I still don't think they're quite there yet. It's a good squad. It's better than what it was last year. Still, there's something not quite right. I think that's probably more down to my opinion on Mourinho and his kind of new management approach, which I'm not sure is that well associated with winning the league, that is. Liverpool, I think, won't get near the top four. I can see them dropping off considerably. I just don't think they're actually that good. Look at their squad, they're really not actually that good at all. And Man City, I'm still not convinced by Guardiola in the Premier League. I think it's going to be another one of those seasons for me where one of the teams does really quite well and the other ones just never seem to get up and running. A bit like the Leicester season. Never really start properly. And I just think Arsenal, I think it is quite lined up for them this year. And I think now we have a team that does really well. A bit like Chelsea did last year and Leicester the year before.
I just don't think Arsenal have addressed their problems.
I think the back, for years they needed a centre back and a defensive midfielder, and they never seemed to buy them.
I think Holding's good enough, and I think Elneny, he looks alright.
I like Elneny. I think he's a good player.
I mean, sure, they didn't excel in their first season, but I think a lot of players do that. They don't necessarily shine in the first season, and the second season, all of a sudden, it all seems to click a lot better. I think they're lined up for a good season.
I think the three at the back will help Arsenal as well, which they moved to at the end of last season, which I thought was good for them. And yeah, I like I do like their options in attack, but I don't see them winning the league for me. I think they'll win the Europa.
Richard?
I think they'll be sixth.
So do I.
So Richard, who do you think is going to win the league?
I'm going for our noisy neighbours, Manchester City.
Yeah. Do you think they spent like 260 million on this? Defence.
They've spent however much million on defence, but actually not really bought any defenders.
Yeah.
Defence sure doesn't look that good, does it? 200 million.
They bought defenders that generally attack, haven't they?
Yeah, it's Harry Guardiola.
They're going to be exciting to watch. If they go out and still get the likes of Sanchez as well, which from Arsenal, it's going to be an amazing strike force.
Mm.
And I'm going to already say now who I think is going to be top scorer, but I'm going to go for one that Anthony doesn't rate at all, but Gabriel Jesus.
It's not that I don't rate him, it's that it's impossible to say he will. He looks like a good young player, but he got injured so after a couple of games in the Premier League. You've just not seen enough of him to judge him. And, unless anyone watches the Brazilian League every week, I don't think anyone can really say.
You think he's going to be top scorer? I'm sorry, that is my Ukraine are going to win the Euros, Chelsea are going to be terrible, West Ham are going to get top four moment. You think he's going to go ahead and get like 26 goals? You're mental.
I'll tell you what, Rich, and I'll have a bet with you. We'll do a Piers Morgan style bet. I'll bet that Aguero outscores Jesus this season and we'll do a donation to charity.
I bet Charlie Austin out fucking scores him. Gabriel Jesus, the top scorer. Maybe in 3 years.
No, I think
you've lost your mind. You've got no poison. You've lost your mind.
Anthony,
Guardiola absolutely loves him. He will be playing.
I think Aguero will outscore Jesus this season.
You're mad.
So, Anthony, who do you think is going to win the league?
I think City, and I think Aguero is going to be top goal scorer. I think Jesus will play a role, but Aguero, for me, is still the main man. Jesus will most likely come good at some point, probably, but we've just not seen him in the Premier League enough to, we're talking about, I said Morata and Lacazette are hard as predict because they've not proven in the Premier League. He's not even proven in any decent league in Europe.
You've come for City, are you being paid off by the Sheikhs?
I've gone for United. I think Matic is the last piece of the puzzle we needed.
So. I think Matic will fit in very nicely at United, but I think United will finish second in the league for me.
Right. So next on the list is who do you think is going to get relegated?
That's tough. I mean, I'm not going to go for City. I know we've been bought out by the UAE, but I don't think we can predict them for everything. There's a lot of sides I think are in danger. I'm going to do Nick a favour. I don't think Bayern are going to go down.
Ooh, okay.
I just think they're going to be a little bit like Burnley. You can't explain how, but they're actually all right. They just keep getting 1-0, 2-1s. They just do just about enough at home to cover themselves. I think Watford's a decent shout. I do like some of their players. I think that Roberto Pereira they have in midfield, I think he's very good.
Hmm.
But there's just that element of self-implosion. They're almost like the French national team with Watford. There always just seems to be an element of they all hate each other and it's all going to go to shit in 5 minutes. And I think that you can only survive so many seasons doing that. Swansea almost had it last year. But I think, Watford will be one. Can I say Sunderland again, even though they've already done them? No, I can't.
I'm really struggling with this. I think I've got about five. I reckon we'll go down.
Newcastle, I think, as well. I don't think they've strengthened well. I think Dwight Gale's good, but I don't think that squad's actually that much better than anyone else's. And the last one might be in left field. I think Stoke could be in danger. Mm. They seem to be in a bit of trouble last year. And I don't think they've lost all of their hard players. I don't mean hard like Vinnie Jones hard. I mean Premier League, 90 minutes every week, proper players.
Stoke going to be one of my picks, actually. Stoke, Burnley, Huddersfield.
I didn't say Huddersfield. That's how much I forgot them.
So have you gone for Huddersfield, Stoke, and who was your last one? I'm still with Shane, sorry.
You know what? Screw it. If I get it right, I'm a hero. Watford, Newcastle, and Stoke.
Cool. I've gone for Brighton. Sorry, Nick. I've gone for Burnley because they lost Aldrie Gray today, and I don't know where they're going to score. No.
Sam Vokes
and Walters are their strike.
That's a Premier League lineup right there.
that's a running around like headless chickens up front.
Who was the last championship team Jonathan Walters played for? Exactly.
And I'm going to go Swansea if they lose Sigurdsson. But depends whether they lose him. So. But I'm going to go, yeah, so I'll go Brighton, Burnley, Swansea. Anthony?
I agree with you. I think Swansea are in trouble. I do like Paul Clement, their boss, but yeah, I think they're in trouble. I know Burnley have lost Andre Gray. They've got a good fee for him, and I'm sure they'll replace him. But I think they've brought in a few decent players. I think Jack Cork, Johnny Walters. They brought in the Leeds left back, haven't they? Charlie Taylor, who's a good player. Yeah. I like him. I think Burnley have invested quite well, really. I think they'll stay up. I also think Watford will stay up because of Marco Silva. I think he's a great manager.
I just think there's too many goals, and with Troy Deeney and Andre Gray and that Nigerian I can't remember the name of.
And Michael Keane, obviously the big loss at the back, but yeah, I think Burnley will just about stay up. I think so my three, I've gone for Stoke. I think Arnautovic is a big loss. He's a bit of a wild card for them. And Johnny Walters, I've gone for Stoke to go down. I think Swansea will go down, especially because if Sigurdsson leaves, which looks very likely. And then I was torn for a long time between Brighton or Huddersfield for that last place, because I think one of them will stay up. I'm really sorry, Nick, but I'm going to say Brighton to go down, Huddersfield to just stay up. So yeah, my three, Brighton, Swansea and Stoke.
Alright, so who do you think is going to be the best signing of the season so far?
Well, I've already kind of put my colours on the mast. I think it'll be Lacazette. I think he'll turn around and score 20 goals. I think he looks absolute. He looks like he should have always been a Premier League player. that's the simplest terms I can put in it. I think he's going to be gold dust, and there will be a lot of teams kicking themselves they didn't get him 2 years earlier.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Matic. Same reason I said before. I think he's going to be. He's going to go a similar role to Kante, I reckon. What Kante did at Chelsea last season, I reckon he might do the same job for United.
I'm going Bernardo Silva. Anthony knows how much I rated him last year.
Yeah.
And I think he's one of the classiest players around.
I'm going to say Davy Klaassen, sticking with the class. Yeah, I think he'll have a good season for Everton. I think he's a good player. He'll get forward, score some goals for them. So, yeah, Klaassen's my pick. I think Will Hughes will have a decent season at Watford, but he'll be a bit more of an under-the-radar one rather than, you know, someone who we're going to think of as signing of the season, really.
So I want to give an honourable mention to Ian Acho and Klaassen Acho. I think they'll also have really good seasons.
Right, so on the other side, who are we going to think is going to be the worst signing of the season?
I've got two. Rich is going to hate me for one of these. I'm going to counter you by saying Bernardo Silva to flop. I think they paid a lot of money for him, and I think the problem is I don't think he's going to have a bad season, so I think he's going to be labelled a flop because City have got so many options in that attacking midfield positions. I just don't see him nailing down a first team spot, which when you're paying that kind of money, he's sort of got to do. So he's one. My second is Lindelof, who for me has looked a bit of a loose cannon in pre-season.
He's a loose cannon.
what I saw of him in the Champions League, I didn't watch the Portuguese League, but I saw him a couple of times in the Champions League, and I don't think he's good enough. And I think I'd rather have Rojo, I'd rather have Smalling, and I'd rather have Bailly. You know, Jones if fit, maybe, I don't know. It's hard to say, but yeah, he's definitely not in United's best two centre-backs for me. So yeah, Lindelof and Bernardo Silva for me.
Bernardo Silva, though, like when City bought him, it was it about 42 million for him? For who got French Player of the Year? If you look at like what prices have gone to since City bought him, that's a steal.
Okay, but do you think he will start? Like, because you know, you look at City, they got De Bruyne, they got Silva, they got Yaya Toure playing an advanced role. They got Sterling, they've got Jesus, Sané, of course. You know, they've got so many other attacking players, and I just don't see him, you know, being one of them key players for City. I just don't see it. They've even got the other Silva, David Silva as well. I don't know if I mentioned him or not.
Well, he's already said he's leaving in 2 years, but...
Yeah, but that's in 2 years' time.
I think he will be getting a couple of games.
Okay. Who's your worst signing, then?
I've gone for Kyle Walker.
I just wanted to offer some contrasting opinions, that's all.
Well, I'm going to wind because I'm saying Lacazette.
Oh, wow, we are controversial today, aren't we?
I think there's a reason why only Arsenal went in for him. Like on the flip side of what Shane said, that everyone will regret not going in for him. I think there's a reason why. And I think, you know, it shows that he doesn't ever get into the French side.
There's also a reason no one went for Lionel Messi as well, but, you know, it's been out there.
You know, most teams in Europe could have afforded him, but they didn't want him.
Okay, I'm going to go for another one, Chris, and probably everyone else here. Matic.
No.
Yeah, I know what you're thinking. That doesn't make sense. He's a standard Premier League player. He's quality and all of that lot. True. All of that's true. I just don't think he's going to play that often. I think Man United have good strength and depth in midfield, and I think he'll be there for a year. And then he'll move on to somewhere like Russia or Turkey. I just think he's going to maybe have a few games. I'm not sure if his head will be quite the same. I know that seems weird. It's only moved from Chelsea to United, but I would be surprised if he has the same competitive mentality he did when he was, you know, in his top form at Chelsea. Because he didn't seem to have it massively last year. He didn't have the best season, even though Chelsea did go on and win the league. I think something's lost there. I can't quite put my finger on it, but I just... think he'll only be there for a year United, or maybe two, and have like a Morgan Schneiderlin situation. Can't quite say why, but there you go.
No.
But the safer bet will be Jan Bednarek at Southampton, because any time we bring in somebody who's completely unknown, yeah, they're shit. But that's only like 5 million, so that's not going to be, you know, getting any kind of headlines.
Yeah, I've gone for Kyle Walker. So I think they've spent 50 million on a player who bombs up the wing, then stops and passes it backwards. And
it works on FIFA.
With City and fullbacks, I'd be very interested to see how Danilo does, because he was fantastic, and then he joined Real Madrid and he looked atrocious in a Real Madrid shirt. So he's one of them. He I don't know which one will put him, which category will put him in, but he he's not going to be an in between. He's going to be one or the other. He's either going to be amazing or he's going to be atrocious, I think.
I can see him actually playing more in a defensive midfielder role.
Just think, guys, what if we had sold Luke Shaw in this transfer window? God, we'd have got 400 billion for him. I'm looking at some, like, you know, people go to Southampton, look at some of the chances, the money they got for some of these players. Can you imagine if we had these players to sell now? My God! Lallana, 90 million. He's shit Liverpool. He's actually kind of average. Ricky Lambert for 30 million. This would have been incredible. But no, he had to do it before the stupid money came into play.
For Coutinho.
Oh my God, like, that is absurd.
It's like, he's an okay player. He's nothing, he's not world class.
How is Coutinho potentially worth £120 million? How does that happen? Someone explain that.
Do Barcelona actually see him as a replacement for Neymar, then?
Even if I was a fan of the richest club in the world and I just signed superheroes, I wouldn't pay £120 million for Iniesta in his prime, even in today's market. I still think that's mental. He's a midfielder. What are you doing? Who costs more than Pogba? What is this? What's happening? God, well, Daniel Levy's right. Who thought?
Do you want to kind of rush through these next three? Was it? Who do you think will be the first team to have a player sent off?
West Brom.
Leicester. They're playing on Friday.
Ooh, that's a smart bet, I'm going to go with Stoke because they've lost the presence of Glenn Whelan and therefore a defensive midfielder will not know what to do. So they'll just foul people.
Yeah, I've gone for Brighton again because I just think they'll be under the cosh against City. And eventually we'll get somebody sent up. So, all right, your Premier League Player of the Year. Hello?
I'll say De Bruyne because he'll keep Bernardo Silva out of the team.
No, because he'll be playing like attacking mid and Bernardo Silva will be on the back.
I understand. No, genuinely, De Bruyne is my prediction for the player of the season.
Okay, Richard.
I'm going for the Dabmeister, Paul Pogba.
Ooh. I thought you were going with Jesse Lingard then.
No. Pogba, Jesus Christ, you aren't deluded today. The food poisoning has got to you properly. I'm gonna be really safe because I've gone for Arsenal. You two have gone for City to win the league. So Sanchez, because whoever he ends up playing for.
I'm gonna go. Hopefully, Harry Kane will have an injury-free season and win loads more goals. Right, who do you think's gonna be the first managerial departure?
Rafa Benitez. Left field. I think Newcastle are gonna be shit. So there we go.
I think Conte will leave pretty early in the season. Like, you know, it'll shock everyone. Like when Mourinho left Chelsea the first time. I think
Conte's my.
That's my gut feeling.
I was going to say Conte as well.
Yeah, Conte was mine as well. Right, and finally, we're going to do one bold prediction for the Premier League each. So, Shane.
Eden Hazard to shit his pants during a game. Or just generally be awful. There we go, that's the serious one. But if the first one happens, you heard it here first, guaranteed.
Diego Costa to come in from the stands and not take out Conte.
Diego Costa for new Cantona.
I think I've already done mine, really, with Gabriel Jesus being top scorer.
Anthony?
I think I've done mine with suggesting Huddersfield will stay up and that Chelsea won't finish in the top four. I'll say Rooney to score a total of 2 goals this season. I think he'll have a terrible season.
I'm going to go for Palace to relegate Brighton because I think they play each other with 3 or 4 games to go and I reckon on that game they'll relegate them.
And Ukraine to win the World Cup at the end of the year. Come on, it's got to happen eventually. Predict every year until I die.
Well, every 4 years.
Do you know what? They'll win friendly competitions in the interim.
Alright, so thank you for everyone for joining us. Follow us on Twitter, it's at V2Football. Like us on Facebook. Check out the latest articles by Anthony. He seems the only one who writes articles on our website at the moment. V2Football.com. Me and Nick have started a WWE pay-per-view review show, which seems to be pretty successful so far. Thank you if you've been listening to that as well. 72 shows back next week.
Yep.
And also, also the Arsenal Premier League podcast is back on Sunday. Right, so kids, have a good season. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.